Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm very well. How are you today?
As am I. We have a very positive show today. We're going to be talking about a musical in New York. We're going to be talking about Wine Lovers, the musical, the world's first interactive musical wine tasting class.
Basically, it's a musical built for you and me.
It is, and we have tickets next Monday. It's got a 1 week run in Manhattan.
It's two weeks.
And it's produced by the wine writer from Gourmet Magazine, Michael Green. He's going to come on the show and talk about it with us. You actually drink wine with the students on the stage while the class goes on, and it's a musical. What's not to love?
You know what? Never been a huge fan of musicals, but a musical about where I get to taste wine during the musical.
I took my niece to see that ABBA musical. What was it?
Golly, Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia. And I was thinking through the whole thing. I need a drink. so maybe even if the musical's bad, at least you got a glass of wine. Anyway, let's make everybody angry with the first little segment we have here.
Well, we started out angry. Why not make them angry too?
It seems as though, for a long time, there are genetically modified beets. Right now, most of the genetically modified products we have in the market are corn, soybeans, canola, and something else.
Not rice.
Something else. But most other crops have been mm-hmm. – there's some consumer resistance now to
sure.
genetically modified crops. And in Europe, it's not illegal to sell genetically modified crops, but you have to label it. And nobody in Europe wants to buy it.
And nobody will buy it.
So the European exported products don't, generally have a lot of – like our rice abroad, a lot of people won't buy it. Because it's been polluted with genetically modified rice. Our wheat, they won't buy it.
That was the product you were trying to remember.
But sugar beets are the source of most of America's sugar.
Yeah, a little over 50%.
Not sugar cane, but sugar mm-hmm. beets. And for a while there – they had introduced a genetically modified strain of sugar beets, which is Roundup resistant. Roundup is an herbicide produced by Monsanto, and Monsanto produces crops that are resistant to this herbicide.
And the idea is you can spray whatever amount of herbicide you want to.
It doesn't kill the beets.
It's the philosophy. You can spray as much herbicide as you want to kill all the weeds and everything else, but it won't kill your product.
And what happens is when people use traditional herbicides, they need to be careful of them because they can't spray too much of them because they'll kill the beets, right? So anyway, Roundup Ready stuff is...
Hold on. And we really want you to be careful when you're spraying herbicide.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good thing. So the Roundup Ready beets, though, it seems as though they're about to be planted next year. And the farmers are talking about how this is going to make their jobs a lot easier. They're not going to have to pay between $50 and $150 an acre to have their beet fields weeded. Who weeds an acre for $150? They're not paying those migrant farmers, those migrant laborers, too much money. $150 an acre.
An acre.
I can't weed my front garden. I'd give you $200 to do my front garden. That is now going to be planted. And it's going to be planted because we haven't made enough of a stink. If you go to our website and go to Organic Consumers Alliance, you mm-hmm. will be able to contact them and figure out a way to raise a stink.
Well, they raised the stink.
Yeah, and they did raise the stink.
And they delivered about 600 or 700 emails in
1 hour.
In 1 hour. And then
the Growers Association blocked that email.
Growers Association turned off the email. Yeah, we're not listening to you anymore.
Here's what's going on.
We know you care. We're not listening.
Here's what's going on. Is it's going to go into, because we're in America and we don't require that they label it, this sugar is going to go into all of your products. Unless we raise a stink right now and you call up Hershey's and you say, and we'll put a list of the companies cited in this article as to ways you can make your voice heard. If you go to restaurantguysradio.com, it'll probably take me a day to get it up there, but mm-hmm. we'll get it up there. But you have genetically modified beets. They're all from a single beet. All of these millions of beets that are planted throughout the country will be from a single beet.
So basically, what will happen is if there's some fungus that we can't figure out that kills this beet and we can't figure out how to kill it, we'll eliminate beets from the planet if this.
If
that's the end game, if Monsanto has their druthers and everyone begins using the genetically modified beets.
Now the beet farmers are saying that the consumers, there's no consumer resistance. The consumers wouldn't have any issues to buying sugar and products from genetically modified beets. The quote from the Kellogg spokeswoman is, that's Chris Charles, most consumers are not concerned about biotech. However, most consumers are not aware that there's biotech in there because we don't need to label it in the United States.
You know, one of the other great problems we have with once we put a crop out there is cross-pollination. Cross-pollination, things happen in nature. That's just what happens. And one of the things that they've said is beets don't produce seeds until their second year, so you won't have to worry about this.
Because the beets
get harvested. Okay, I had a half an acre farm that my father and I farmed together. It was 50 acres, but we farmed half an acre, less than an acre. Okay, and we grew potatoes there. Okay, there's no chance you're getting every single potato. There's no chance you're getting every single beet out of the ground. Okay, there's no chance.
And here's the problem with genetically modified organisms. When you plant them in the ground, they cross-pollinate, they crossbreed, and they Monsanto even admits that this can happen. They talk about in general how beets are harvested every year, so you don't have to worry about any seeds staying in the ground to cross-pollinate with the other beets or the weeds or anything else. And even in this article, they admit that in California, beets stay in the ground through the winter, and there are weeds that can mate. Listen to this, everybody. There are weeds that can mate with the sugar beets, so growers there may be more cautious about the Roundup Revolution. Okay, what Mark just said is he farms potatoes.
Okay.
You don't get every single potato. It's a farm field. When you release genetically modified organisms into the environment, they breed with the non-genetically modified.
They just will.
And what you get
no
then,
doubt about it.
And what you get then, especially since there are weeds that mate with, that cross-pollinate with beets, guess what happens when you have a beet that's been bred specifically to be resistant to pesticides, and it cross-pollinates
with a weed.
The weed then becomes specifically resistant to pesticides.
Hey, that seems like a bad idea, Francis.
Anybody ever hear of kudzu? You know, I mean, kudzu was a farm green that was introduced into the South. And if you drive down parts of the South, it just takes over the road and it blocks out, it knocks out all the native species. Look, I'm not saying that I know that these beets, when released into the environment, are going to be dangerous or not. But what I am saying is they don't know either.
Right. We don't know. And that's the bottom line. We don't know. And I love, there's a picture in the New York Times of a guy holding two beets. And he's, look, it looks exactly like the other beet.
Yeah. One's radioactive, of course.
He's holding a genetically modified beet in one hand and a traditionally grown beet in the other hand. He's like, look, they're exactly the same. They look exactly the same.
It's just crazy. And the reason this is going through here is because unlike other crops, we don't export much of our beets. Most of our beet consumption is for local. Most of our beet production is for local consumption, and so the Europeans who are smarter than we are, who have it labeled if it's genetically modified.
I don't know if they're smarter than we are.
Well, this part of their agriculture.
maybe in this particular instance,
their agricultural
they have
policy.
More history and experience than we.
But not with genetically modified crops. They want their food labeled so they know what the hell they're eating, and because. Well, they know we don't, and this is a domestic market. It's sliding by. If you want to find out more and maybe see if you can raise your voices and do anything, because this is only happening because we're complacently allowing it to happen.
Well, that's what happened. Is basically, this was defeated 2 years ago, and now we're allowing it to happen again.
It's the Organic Consumers Alliance. You can find out about them by going to our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and raise your voices and make them heard. After the break, we talk about more fun stuff, the world's first interactive wine-tasting musical. Can't wait to go see it myself. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450. WCTC. The time is 11:16.
Central Jersey Talk Radio. Central Jersey 1450. WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant, and we're joined today by Michael Green. He has a new musical out. It's called Wine Lovers the Musical. It's an interactive musical wine tasting experience.
Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Restaurant Guys.
First question, Are you crazy?
Yeah, actually, know, I think I'm crazy, not as much that I've created this concept, but that I'm producing this concept. If you thought the world of wine and food could be a conundrum and challenging, try writing and producing a show. But that's been it's been a joyful challenge.
Yeah, creating it wasn't dumb enough. You could have just sold it off to somebody else and let them do it.
Exactly. It's sort of like the dysfunctional folks. We still have to be in the restaurant. We still have to work with wine. But, you know, it's interesting. I worked in the wine business my whole life, and for the last 18 years I've been the wine consultant to Gourmet Magazine. And throughout all the years of wine education, I realized that there is an inherent theatricality in the wine experience, in the food experience, and why not sort of take this concept and take it to another level? In this case, it's an interactive wine-tasting musical where the audience become both spectators and participants at a real-time wine tasting that's led by a very effervescent teacher.
You know, I when I saw the concept, I thought, nobody has the stones to really do this, you know. And then the more I read about it, I mean, this is quite a production. Now, you're running for a couple of weeks in New York, right?
We are indeed. I mean, there's actually, it's been very, very interesting because with a strong wine and food background and a somewhat limited theatrical background, there was a lot of things to learn. I mean, most notably, with the contracts we have with the actors, we can initially run for a handful of performances, but the main goal is to continue to get interest on the part of the press as well as producers who can really find an environment for this show that goes beyond these performances, whether it's in Napa Valley that wants to reinforce the excellence of a wine or a wine region, a small hotel room in Vegas, or it could actually travel around the country. It's a three-person musical, but there are really two other characters, the wine and the audience, and the show tells the tale of two mismatched students who find a love connection at this wine tasting that the audience is part of.
Now, we should start out by telling everybody that, you know, you're not going to be affected by any striking or anything like that because you're actually off Broadway, correct?
We are indeed, and obviously I would never want to benefit by other folks their misfortune, but it is very interesting because the theater community or the theater-going audience, they are beginning to look at alternative options off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway. So the ticket sales have actually been very strong, and if your listeners want to purchase tickets for the show, they can go to winelovers.themusical.com.
Actually, and we're gonna link that up on our website, and I suggest you go see it. Mark and I are going. What are we going next? Mark, next Monday?
I think Monday we're going.
Oh, that's great. And you know, some of the songs are just strictly pure entertainment and have a bit of a playful educational value. One song is called "Sea Swirl Smell, Sip Swish Spit." Another song is called "The Screw Cap Tap." And a lot of the other songs really focus on the relationship and how wine can really be such a connector and can be really such a great way to bring people together. Because as you guys know, beyond the fact of how a wine tastes, we also enjoy it in the context of life, who we're with, what we're serving it with, the time of year.
Well, the whole idea of that, you know, wine, you can save time in a bottle. You know, a wine comes from, the best wines come from a very specific place and a very specific time and have a very specific taste that, at least so far, can't be reproduced. And that's, I mean, that's the whole thing that makes a wine different than a Coke. A Coke's supposed to be the same everywhere, right?
Exactly. I mean, to your point, I mean, really a wine is sort of like a snapshot in time. And it's been very interesting because a lot of folks have asked us, well, what types of wines are we going to be tasting throughout the show? And it was this fine balance as one of the writers to obviously let folks know what they're tasting, but that the wine show not be a shameless advertorial or an advertisement for these wines. So the way the show is written, it's really written by styles. So like one of the first wines is a light, clean, fresh wine. The second wine is more of an oaky, buttery style of wine, et cetera, et cetera. So we can plug in appropriate wines for different productions. And it's been such a fun journey because my two other collaborators on this project, Gary Negbar, who co-wrote the music, and one of the other book writers, Travis Kramer, it's been a really fun journey because they have less of a wine sensibility and more of a theater sensibility. And both Travis and Gary have just brought so much to this project.
You know, it's funny. I think that when you talk about wine, you know, it's wine often made by small producers, wine often and it made it, is an agricultural product. And when you talk about wines in general, you talk about specific wines, and I guess we do promote or sell. I mean, we certainly do promote or sell specific wines, but it's very different than I remember the show, the restaurant, the reality TV show, the restaurant.
Sure.
And I remember they would break to the moment where they were like the beer truck driver
the
is
Budweiser
here.
Has just arrived.
No, it was Coors.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And the Coors truck would be there, and the camera would follow the Coors guy from the back, so you could see Coors on his back all the way in, and he'd say, for no reason having anything to do with the plot, I've got the Coors.
I think that's a great example of product placement that's not part of the editorial environment, and it was shameless. I mean, the same way, if you remember, everyone was paying with their American Express card and a big close-up
right.
on it.
I got to share with you one thing, and then we're going to take a quick break. I'll come back, and we'll continue this line, but my favorite part of the restaurant where Mark and I are like, oh, come on! where somebody comes up to Rocco DiSpirito, and they're like, Rocco, we can't pay the bills, we're over budget, we're not open for 2 weeks. And he turns to his assistant and says, oh, just call the people at American Express Open. They'll take care of everything.
Exactly. And I have to tell you, I was really, throughout this process, mindful that that's not what I wanted this show to be.
Well, actually, I've read a lot about that, and I can't wait to see the show. We'll come back and talk more in just a moment with Michael Green about his new musical, Wine Lovers, the musical. You can find out about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Back in just a minute, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:25.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light.
Vogue magazine calls Jackie Naylor the new voice of jazz. We call her family. Jackie has 6 critically acclaimed albums to her credit, including the brand new Smashed for the Holidays. From the Wall Street Journal to New York Magazine to the Village Voice, the praise is universal. The Restaurant Guys present Jackie Naylor in a Champagne New Year's Eve concert at the Crossroads Theater in New Brunswick. Champagne at intermission provided by the extraordinary Lenobe family of champagnes. Dine before or after the show at one of our restaurants right next door. The beautiful new Heldrich Hotel across the street has preferred room rates for our guests, so you don't even have to drive. Spend New Year's Eve with champagne, jazz, great food, and the Restaurant Guys. For tickets, menus, hotel rates, or more information, it's 732-828-4444 or restaurantguysradio.com. Spend New Year's Eve with us.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking with Michael Green. He's Gourmet Magazine's wine consultant and wine writer, and his musical in New York is Wine Lovers, the musical. And people, how are ticket sales going? People can still get tickets.
Ticket sales are going great. And the contract that we have with the Actors Union in New York, we're able to do up to 8 performances in New York. But the slam dunk for us, and so far the response has been great, is that we're looking for other entities who understand the power of this production and the joy of this production that can take it to another place. Because while in effect I'm presenting the show, I'm not a full-time producer, and we're looking for someone who understands how cool this concept is and can blow it out like a show like I Love You, You're Perfect Now, Change, Blue Man Group, Stomp, something like that. And the response so far has been really powerful.
You know, so if there were a little theater group, let's say, in New Brunswick, New Jersey, you might want to bring it there?
Yeah, or basically you're just having on a tour in many different places. Absolutely. I just think that it makes for such a great night out. It's social. It puts wine in a very different type of context. And the director of the show, Holly Ann Ruggiero, she is a firecracker. She actually was the assistant director on The Jersey Boys and Billy Crystal's one-man show, 700 Sundays. And the unexpected joy for me was, frankly, working with such a talented group of theater professionals to bring the show to life.
Well, and you have a theater background yourself, though, right?
I do, but I try not to remind myself of that. Yes. And actually, I tell most of the listeners or folks who write, well, Michael, are you in this show? And I say, no, I am not in this show. And that's a bonus for the audience that I'm not in this show. But I do. And so it's been really fun to sort of have these two worlds collide in the most joyful way, the inherent theatricality of the world we work in the world of wine and food, and my background. So it's been a lot of fun.
When we come back after the news, I want to talk more with Michael, who is Gourmet Magazine's wine consultant, wine writer, who's also producing this musical in New York. You can find out more about it at our website, restaurantguysradio.com. I want to talk about your work as a wine writer and your work in the wine business and communication through wine, and what my friend Kevin Zarelli has, the term he's coined is a wine-tertainment. entertainment after the news. We'll be back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Michael Green is Gourmet Magazine's wine consultant. He's also the producer of the brand new musical, Wine Lovers, the Musical. It's the world's first interactive wine-tasting musical where you and the audience also get a few glasses of wine. So, we talked before the break a little bit about the idea of wine as communication, and I mentioned a phrase that my friend Kevin, or I'm sure that you know him as well, Kevin Zarelli used when we talked about wine classes. And, you know, we give a lot of wine classes, and I know you teach a lot of wine classes, but there are wine classes for people who are studying for their Master Sommelier or Master of Wine degree, and that's one kind of wine class. And then there's a wine class that you give to people who want to learn a little bit about wine, who are interested in wine, who are consumers. And that sort of has to fall in the area of wine entertainment, don't you think?
You said there was an effervescent teacher.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think first off, Kevin Zarelli, I tell folks that Kevin Zarelli in some ways is sort of like the Julia Child for all of us in the wine industry.
Absolutely.
He really has given so many people, myself included, the opportunity to do what we do and get paid for it.
Before we go on further, how did Kevin Zarelli, let's have a little pay on to Kevin Zarelli. How did he affect your career?
Well, I think he affected my career that when I was very, very young and beginning to learn about wine, and I was actually still in my late teens, but I think when I would go to wine classes or hear people talk about wine, a lot of the inherent life of what wine was all about was sucked out by teachers who I know in their hearts were passionate, but the way they communicated had nothing to do with what the end user really wanted or needed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what Kevin's really has initially did so well is his background initially was as a nursery school teacher or kindergarten teacher. He began to think about different ways to teach and different ways to present that ultimately open up wine to a wine experience. And at the end of the day, that's really all we're looking for. I think we're looking for an authentic, meaningful experience. And I've been able to capitalize on that in a very exciting way, that a core part of our business is we now create unique wine and food experiences around the world with our company called the Liquid Assets Consulting Group.
You know, and Kevin, teaching on a kindergarten level really appealed to me.
Because mm-hmm. That's where Mark's level was when he first met Kevin. Well, now you've taken that very same idea and taken it to another level with this musical and presenting things in sort of a lighthearted, yet you could learn something by going to this musical at the same time.
I think you'll learn something. I mean, I think at the end of the day, one of the exciting challenges for the creative team was the conceit. Is it a wine-tasting musical, or is it a musical wine-tasting?
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, we've decided on the former, that this is not going to be so jam-packed with information that the life of a theatrical experience is sucked out of it. I think a great example is the Food Network. While you might learn something about cooking, at the end of the day, food needs to function in an environment on television that's entertainment.
Well, and isn't learning, let's broaden the discussion a little bit from just the musical, but I always like him when I talk about learning about wine in a classroom setting, which is kind of an odd way to learn about wine. I mean, you can learn about wine by just drinking wine a lot. That was the way I started. Or you can go into a classroom tasting, but learning about wine is sort of like learning about music. You know, it's not just critical analysis, it's not accounting. You know, you need to learn the facts about it if you want to navigate your way around the intricacies, but you need to see how to love it, right?
So some of it has to be by feel.
Indeed, and I think a few things to what you're saying is that, you know, sometimes the word wine education, the word education scares me, because while people might say they're looking for education, deep down as part of a needs analysis, they're looking for other things. They're looking to not feel stupid when they go to a restaurant or a wine shop. They're looking to impress a girl for a first date. They're looking to feel more comfortable when pairing a wine with a food. So I think that for many people, the wine, the way they enjoy it, is in the context of their life. So much so that one of the lovely, lovely songs in our show is a song called The Wine I Enjoyed the Most. And the heart of this song really focuses less on the wine. The lyric goes, more important than price and more vital than taste, this wine made a memory that can't be replaced. That's the wine I enjoyed the most. I think that's true for many of us.
Now, will there be hopefully an album of hits from this?
My gosh, you guys, you're doing the PR and marketing for me. We'd love to be able to have an album and sell posters and buttons and T-shirts. But right now, actually, I just need to survive the opening. And as I said, it's been a great journey, and tickets are still available. WineLoversTheMusical.com. But yeah, we think there's a lot of interesting ancillary tie-in and elegant product placement and tie-ins with whether it's retail shops, water companies, cracker companies, glassware companies. But right now, we're taking one step at a time.
You know, it's funny. I'm having a flashback of the first time we had Jackie Naylor, who's a pretty cool jazz singer with five or six albums to her credit on the show. And we got to talking, and then after the show, we started talking some more, and now we're producing a concert for her at the Crossroads Theater right next to our restaurant.
Guys, see, I love it. You're starting a class in radio entrepreneurship.
By the way,
we're starting a class in how to diversify in a way that actually makes your life completely crazy.
But, you know, it's very interesting because in my company, you mentioned Kevin Zarelli as a brand, with Liquid Assets Consulting Group, we think there's such a market for these authentic, can't-be-bought experiences. I've now got a great team of folks working with me. Got a senior associate, David Flaherty, who, beyond a strong wine background, he's got some very cool passions and fly fishing and beer, and we're going to tie that into what we're doing. And then we have a culinary projects director, a young man who's worked in kitchens since he was 13 years old, who's hopefully going to be doing a lot of really cool, edgy, walking hot dog tour of Chicago, or how to navigate a restaurant experience from an etiquette perspective. So we really see a lot of opportunities in creating great experiences for corporations who are always looking for fun ways to entertain internally or externally.
One of the things that I read about you, and I've read about in prior to Wine Lovers the Musical, which prompted me to say to Shari, our producer, get Michael on the show.
Thank you. But you have
people hire you, corporations hire you to talk about wine, to actually talk about their subject matter in terms of wine, or to talk about wine in terms of their subject matter. How does that work?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And I really think that when people ask what differentiates what I do and what my company does from other folks, at the end of the day, wine just becomes the messenger and the medium. We could be talking about apples, oranges. We could be traveling minstrels or musicians or magicians. But at the end of the day, we're using wine as a tool to help them reinforce their corporate goals. Let me give you two examples. Let's say we've got a financial company that wants to get in front of their clients and talk about outlook and trends in their industries. We'll parallel these outlook and trends in wines, whether it's issues of globalization, issues of legality, issues of emerging regions. We'll have a textile company that will create the same words you might describe a textile: floral, masculine, feminine, velvety, soft, and marry textiles or fabrics to wines.
You know, which are all words we would use to describe wine.
Exactly. The intersection, it's really the same thing. And I think wine transcends so many categories we don't even know about.
It's funny that you've really, in an interesting way, turned things inside out. Because when Mark and I teach classes, and our head sommelier is a guy named John Kafarski, he also teaches classes, whether in our restaurant or out of it, we always talk about wine. Mm-hmm. We use the examples of whether it's a pattern or a trend. Or
right, we use life examples
to teach about the wine
in our wine classes.
And you're using wine to teach about life.
Exactly.
Life things. That's pretty
and,
cool.
You know, and actually, that's really, really well put. I never thought of my business that way. And I think the other aspect of it is that we talk a lot about wine being a brand, that what you order and how you order it and what you eat and how you eat it can define you as much as a prestige address for a company or a power tie. And to sort of understand what type of brand, who are you? You know, are you more of a per-se guy? Are you more sort of like a jointy restaurant in the East Village or the moral equivalent in Central New Jersey? And sort of understanding that wine can help brand your corporate culture and your personal culture.
Hey, but no matter whether you're a per-se guy or a corner tavern guy, you better be a Shake Shack guy.
Or you don't
have any soul.
Julian,
hey.
who Eric to my office. He's a big Shake Shack guy.
Well, if you go to Shake Shack too often, you become a really big Shake Shack guy. We'll be back in just a moment talking with Michael Green of Gourmet Magazine and Wine Lovers, the musical. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 1145.
I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by the glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work. Until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. We're talking with Michael Green of Gourmet Magazine and Wine Lovers the Musical. Hey, just so you know, you can go to wineloversthemusical.com or link to it through our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be there next Monday. If you see us there, buy us a drink. But what I'd like to talk about, this is our last segment that we get to spend with you, Michael. I'd love to talk about Gourmet Magazine, what it's like to write for a publication like that, which is a general food publication.
Sure. First off, Gourmet has got such a wonderful heritage. It's such an exciting magazine to be associated with, especially under the new editor. Well, now it's been, 6 years or so, Ruth Reichel. She really has taken the magazine in a very, very exciting direction. I am their wine and spirits consultant. Actually, I work with the magazine, not on the editorial side, but on the publishing side, doing a lot of writing, doing a lot of appearances, really bringing the magazine to life. And I've been blessed to have held this position now for 17 years, which in the world of publishing, so I'm told, is like 65 years. And it's just a great brand to be associated with. And it's just given me a lot of opportunities to travel, to represent the magazine, and do a lot of fun writing.
Well, now, Ruth has been on the show a couple of times. But I think it's interesting because you've been there for 17 years, predating Ruth Reichel's taking over the magazine. How do you think the magazine has changed direction? Because it's really been brought up to date, and it's a lot more vibrant. But how exactly was that magazine made more relevant, and how did it change under Ruth's
tutelage? I think you hit the nail on the head when you said the word relevant. I think Gourmet is not scared to really address issues that are of interest to the magazine, and whether it's the politics of organics, the ethics of throwing a live lobster into a boiling pot of water, the dynamics of Walmart being a food purveyor, a lot of issues I think are very relevant to all of us today, and especially a gourmet reader. And I think the photography's become a lot more vibrant. I think the layout's been a lot more exciting. And I don't mean to seem like a walking advertisement for the magazine, but I've seen so many changes, especially over the last 5 years, that I'm so proud to be associated with such a powerful magazine.
Well, one of the things that's happened in the world is people are realizing that food is very relevant to their lives. It has an impact on everything around you. It has an impact on the planet. Has an impact on the farmers. Have an impact on what's going on.
It seems to me that the wine and spirits coverage at Gourmet has gotten a little more in depth and a little more complex. Is that true?
I think in some ways it has. I think in the same breath, though, I think a lot of readers, beyond the intellectualism of learning about a specific region, they really want a selection of certain wines at a certain price point that might work well with some of Gourmet's recipes and some of Gourmet's dishes. So I think it's really that balance of, giving in-depth articles that often place wine in the context of a travel piece or a food and travel piece, with that balance, okay, where can I find this wine? Where can I buy that wine? And I think for many of us, if you broaden the discussion beyond gourmet, I think it goes back to what we were all talking about earlier, you know, enjoying wine in the context of travel, of food.
I think that that's something that's true in all the publishing world, it, having to do with food and wine, is people really want things to be contextualized. So, for instance, when you see food books that aren't necessarily cookbooks, they'll often now contain recipes, or cocktail books about cocktails and beverage will contain recipes. And by the same token, cocktail books contain stories. They're no longer just collections of recipes, and the same goes for cookbooks. I mean, do you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, think about it. You can serve an anonymous bottle of wine blindly to 10 people, and they may like it or they may not like it. But then if you tell them whether they liked it or not, A, this wine sells for $300 a bottle. B, only 37 cases were made of it. And C, it's got 30 years of age to it or something like that. It is indeed going to most probably change people's impression. Not they're going to like it more or less, but it will add a different context to them.
And it'll certainly add conversation to the day.
Absolutely. And I think wine there, too, is sort of, we were talking about branding earlier, can be an icebreaker. Wow, I've never had a sparkling wine from New Mexico before. Wow, I've never had a red wine from the Loire Valley before.
Well, you know, one of the other things I talk to people about all the time is I recommend, I'm always in wine classes and on the show trying to talk to people about aging wine. And I always say, you know, don't do the Noah's Ark case, two bottles of six different wines. Buy a case of wine, even if it's, you know, you can get an inexpensive German Riesling for $10 or $15 a bottle that'll age for 10 or 15 years. And one of the reasons I suggest people do this is because when you age something in your own cellar or in your basement, you participate in the process, and you take over part of the story. And so when you give someone a bottle of wine, and the story becomes, yeah, I bought this wine from Francis 7 years ago, and I've had a couple of bottles since, and I think it's doing really well right now, that's a heck of a lot better gift than, yeah, I stopped by the liquor store, and I picked up this thing. I think it's a wine.
And I put a bow on it.
Yeah.
You know, something that's very interesting what you guys are talking about, because I believe the statistic is the average American consumer will buy and consume a bottle of wine within 6 hours. And so the idea that many of us have never even had the opportunity to have wine with age, let alone being the people who age it. And I think the idea that aging a wine and the different flavors that it can take on not only can be wonderfully complex, but at the very least it can be wonderfully different from a young wine. And I think that's very powerful, and the journey, as the journey of wine goes on.
Well, plus and plus here in the United States, our winemakers release their wines so early. A lot of winemakers are relatively new winemakers, and they, and just for cash flow purposes, release their wines very early.
Yeah, and I think part of that, I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's really about cash flow purposes, and it's so who finances the aging of wine? That's why one category of wine that I'm a huge fan of is the category of Gran Reserva Riojas. Because you can go out tonight and buy a wine that's got 10-plus years of age, and you're potentially not going to spend more than $35, $40.
Michael, we have to leave it there. It's been more than a pleasure to chat with you. Great luck on the musical, and we'll see you Monday night when we come.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Thanks, Michael.
It's been a pleasure. That's Michael Green of Gourmet Magazine, also of Wine Lovers, the musical. You can find out about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We're back in just a moment. 1450 WCTC, the time is 11:56.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. You know, I just have this sinking feeling, Mark, that we are going to produce Wine Lovers the Musical next year. I don't know what it is.
I don't like being in the production business, Francis. I like being in the restaurant
You're
business.
You're producing Jackie Naylor on New Year's Eve.
Yes,
the
I know.
Same way,
I know,
years in a row.
And I don't know what I'm doing.
It's but you're filling the house. It's a great. It's great. And we actually are serving champagne at the Jackie Naylor thing at New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
So we're already serving wine during musical. It's no big deal.
That's right. Maybe we should talk about it and talk about the champagne that we do at intermission and get a little heads up.
I'll tell you something that's interesting. If you want to find out about Jackie Naylor, we did the commercial, and you should go to our website and figure it out. But come on New Year's Eve. We'd love to see you. I don't mean to disparage you. But, you know, this is how the Jackie Naylor thing started. And it's interesting. Our lives are interesting because we didn't know anything about a production or working with a union theater house, mm-hmm. 300 seats, production costs, how to market it. And we did a little bit of winging it, and thank God we didn't lose our shirts the first year. And we're doing it again. But I think that if we work with this guy, that you could have heard it first if you're listening on the radio, so that Mark and Francis get the idea to make their second production. We would actually be producers at that point. Well, third production overall, two shows the same, and we wouldn't do it on New Year's Eve.
I don't know. I like the restaurant business better.
Right, let's do them both. Have dinner before and then go to wine tasting after.
Now, everyone in our audience understands exactly how I get sucked into these things, kicking and screaming every time. Like my life is just comes to some sort of semblance of normality. And friends like, come on, let's produce a show. Let's open another restaurant. Let's do a radio show.
I can't say it's not true. I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Shaw.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 12 noon.